League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
So we're back.
1, 2, 3, 4. Sorry, I just making sure it was recording. Sorry.
I was there. I was early for once, and then I was anyway. So we're back. Natalie's back. I'm back. Tom's back. Well, Tom has always been here. He's never gone away.
The band is back together. It feels great.
I mean, I was there in Monaco. I was lurking around for a few days.
What? Anyway. Hang on. Really?
I was there. Yeah, I was doing some other work, but it was great.
I saw you at that gorgeous film premiere.
At the film premiere with Stuart about Jackie, and it was a very moving evening, wasn't it? My gosh. And it was for Race Against Dementia. He's done the film, or his son has done the film. Fantastic Mark Stuart production, which goes into some depth about the experience that his dad and his mum had as racing drivers in a rather nasty period of motor racing when lots of their friends died. It was very, very moving, and Sir Jackie was moved to tears as well when he got up afterwards to talk about it, and definitely a must-see. That's what I went for, and also I went for something else, but of course it was also possible to see the cars. I walked around the track, you see, so because I was, my hotel was up at the top near Casino.
Hang on, Hotel de Paris, is that where Damon Hill was staying at the Monaco Grand Prix?
I was just a bit down the road in a lesser hotel, and so it was a mind-blowing place. I mean, it is just bursting at the seams with boats and yachts and cars and people in incredibly expensive clothes. And it was a show. I mean, it's an amazing show. And now they're talking about not having it.
But, unthinkable.
I know it's typical that, you know, the race can become processional. But my God, what a show.
Q3 at Monaco is one of the highlights of my Formula One season. I get more excited about that than almost anything else.
I agree.
Did I mention I have had pole position at Monaco?
Tell us about the win you had at Monaco.
Stop it.
That was unfair. That was unkind. Very unkind.
Hello, welcome to F1 Nation. Damon Hill, Tom Clarkson, and me, Natalie Pinkham.
This is the Azerbaijan preview, everybody, by the way. But we will just reflect on Monaco because we didn't get Damon's thoughts.
There's a very neat segue provided by a Mexican driver. But yeah. We'll get to that.
Very good. Indeed. But why is it that in Q3 for the last 2 years, we've had it broken by drivers crashing?
Because they're pushing as well. Don't forget, the last run, you've got to get one in the bag for Monaco. You know you need one. So the first run is really important. So everyone concentrates and goes as fast as they can without crashing. And then the last run is, it doesn't matter if you crash. You just, you know, you might just get pole position or you crash, you know. So, yeah, they're over the limit on the last run.
And then we go on to the race in Monaco. Damon, what did you make of Ferrari's performance?
Tragic, really, wasn't it? I mean, it was, how can you lose the race with two cars to choose from on the front. But of course, the weather. You just throw the weather in any race in Formula One and all bets are off, aren't they? Something is going to happen. Someone's going to trip over themselves. But yeah, so I wanted to sit down with Hannah Schmidt and work out how the hell they managed to stop three times. How did you do that and come out in the lead?
Hannah being the strategist at Red Bull.
I beg your pardon. Yeah, so what a complex calculation that is.
Damon, Ferrari threw it away, though. When you think that the undercut was always going to be powerful when you're changing onto a fresh intermediate in those conditions, the slick tyre was always going to take longer to warm up in those conditions. So the moment they pitted Charles Leclerc, they gave the race away.
What seems to happen is that there's a kind of confusion sometimes between the strategists and the drivers. And it's like there's no clear line of command. So, I mean, when Carlos was asked to come in, he was going, no, I don't want to go. I want to go straight onto slicks. I want to keep going until I get to the slick time and then I want slicks. And so he was giving some clear indication from the track to the race strategists. And I think that in Charles's case, it was, you know, sometimes you can be waiting for the strategist to tell you what to do. And they gave him mixed message as well when it was time to come in. So this business of who decides when you have track conditions that are marginal and changing so fast. I mean, I was looking at the track and I'm going, why are they not going on to slicks now? Most of the track was dry, except for the last bit around Raskas. But I'm not in a modern Formula One car, but I mean, it did look to me like you could have got away with slicks a lot earlier.
We've talked a lot about Monaco, but it is, of course, the Azerbaijan Grand Prix this coming weekend. Who won Monaco last weekend and who won Baku last year?
Yeah, see, that's a curious thing, isn't it? This championship is turning into a fascinating kind of moving feast. And all bets are off, I think. All predictions are off because things happen that are, you know, you're not on paper. You'd say that go to Monaco, Max Verstappen would be quick and Sergio would be probably up there with the Ferraris maybe in the mix. But no, Sergio's up there ahead of Max Verstappen. And now we're going to a race where, okay, he did luck a little bit in last year at Baku. But nevertheless, that's where he won.
And he's always been quick in Baku, hasn't he?
Yes, but I would jump in at that point and say the worst thing you can do going into Baku is predict what's going to happen in Baku.
Exactly. It is. It's one of those, isn't it, Natalie? I mean, it is a track which has got jeopardy and all kinds of curious things happening. You know, cut tyres exploding. Hopefully we won't have that again. But it's a place where a lot of opportunities to make mistakes. Charles famously stacked it, didn't he, in qualifying a few years back.
And we've had a different winner at every race. Obviously, didn't have one in 2020, but a rare thing, isn't it, that no one on the current grid has won it twice. I mean, I know we've only been there 5 or 6 years, but still.
But that all said, Sergio just signed a new 2-year extra extension to his contract, won Monaco, looking on the form of his life, going to a track he won at last year.
I mean, what is going to happen? What is going to happen if they have to make a decision between him and Max in terms of track position? And Because he is in the hunt for this world championship.
He is really good at Baku. It's these short 90-degree corners that Checo always goes well at. And he's been quicker than his teammates pretty much every time he's been there. Okay, Max out-qualified him last year, but he was only race 6 of his Red Bull career then. I think it's a very real problem that they're going to face this weekend. And, you know, it's interesting when you see that Jos Verstappen came out with some pretty sharp comments after the Monaco Grand Prix, didn't he? On Max's website as well. It wasn't just some off-the-cuff remark to a TV station. It was actually written on Max's website saying, we gave away, what was it, 10 points?
And interesting that he's saying that now. He's thinking strategically he has to get this in now to put some pressure on the team because this situation may well rise again very soon, as in this weekend.
Yeah, but they've just signed up Sergio for another. He's not going anywhere, is he? For a bit. I'm quite surprised at some of the things they've said. You know, I think that Red Bull can be quite a confusing team when they have two guys who can be in contention. I think they somehow seem to leave one side feeling left out and the other side feeling favoured, and And you get this the friction we had it a lot with in the past with Seb and Danny Ricciardo,
Mark Webber,
and with Mark Webber as well. And it, so you watch this space. I think you know, Max is there. He is their ace card, I think, and everyone's seen it that way. But he's quite often said things which have been harsh and quite critical of the team, to the extent where he's accusing them of ruining his championship, rather than saying it's a problem we've got and I'm sure they'll fix it because we're a team, we're all one, we fight and lose as one. That hasn't come out of his mouth yet, I don't think.
I wonder what lessons Red Bull learnt during the friction that they had with Vettel and Webber and Ricciardo and Verstappen. In that, you know, have they since then always had it written in a contract that someone is the number one and someone is the number two and this is what is expected of you? Because if you leave it open, you're leaving yourselves open for just more grief down the line, aren't you?
Well, it's a big issue with any team if they're in contention for the World Championship. I mean, ordinarily, most teams are kind of fighting to get to the front. But when they get to the front and they've got a chance with two drivers to win the World Championship, then they've got a problem. And favouring, whether you tactically as a team should favour one driver, the driver with the most points. I mean, if you were doing it as a purely strategic mathematical point, you'd say give the most points to the driver with the most points, and that driver will then extend his lead over your rivals, it being the Ferraris. But you can't do that too soon because people say that's unfair. And quite
well, also, if you get a couple of DNFs, as we've already seen, suddenly the driver you favoured is out of contention and you've fallen between two stools.
Yeah. So this is where we need a game theorist to help us out with this one. Are you better to let it unfold and just see who comes out past halfway with most points, or do you start favouring before you get there?
Or do you, before a race, say, right, whoever is in front, what is it? A 51 lap race or something? Whoever's in front by lap 40, do not change position and just leave it like that. And if Max is second, good luck with that.
Good luck with that one. Or even Sergio, I might say. You know, he's no shrinking violet.
That's true. Sergio. That's true. Yeah. But I mean, is that a potential solution, or are you just leaving yourself open? I immediately think of Senna and Prost at Imola in 1989, and of course the relationship unravelling after that.
Yes, it's happened quite a few times in the past, and I mean Nico and Lewis as well was quite feisty.
The tidiest way to keep it as you want it is to have that troublesome pit stop, isn't it? But I feel, you know, I think to sort of put that on the mechanics, given that, you know, the pit stops are shared between the two crews.
Have you ever spoken, Tom, to a mechanic who has admitted that they deliberately fumbled a pit stop?
Well, no, but I'm actually agreeing with you, saying I think it's a horrible thing to have to ask the mechanics to do. And how you go about doing that as well, you know, the front jackman just doesn't get out the way for a couple of seconds. Is that how you do it? I don't know. But
he sort of saunters out from the garage with a cigarette and a cup of tea.
If we agree that's not the way to do it, then it's going to happen on track, isn't it? And you're potentially going to see your two cars coming together.
Well, of course, another Baku reference here is when Daniel Ricciardo colliding with Max there and then deciding that he was going to go to another team after that because he didn't feel like he was getting the reception, and his excuses were not met with so much sympathy as he thought he should have.
But while we're talking about this intra-team rivalry at Red Bull, I mean, I think, are we now at the point where we can see the shape of this World Championship in terms of who is actually going to be battling for the Drivers' Championship when we get to the last race? Because really, tell me if I'm wrong, there's only two cars in it, Red Bull and Ferrari. So I think we're down to four drivers already. And Carlos is having, he had a better run of it, of course, in Monaco, but he's had a difficult time of it, to the extent that he's, what, 45 points behind Max Verstappen now. So are we talking about a three-horse race already, both Red Bulls and Charles Leclerc?
I think it's still all up for grabs. You know, there has been so much unreliability, hasn't there? I mean, there have been only in Spain when Charles was going to have that race and he had a mechanical failure and you know, we've had, obviously, Carlos has thrown a lot of points away by mistakes on his own side, but maybe he'll fix that.
But I mean, have a look at Max being 46 points behind at one stage, and now he's in the lead again.
A very good point.
So, exactly. You know, Carlos being 45 points behind, he's not out of the reckoning either.
So, but okay, so we're talking about four drivers if we think Carlos is still in it, because although Mercedes are third in the Constructors' Championship, it seems to me that their W13 is so inconsistent and struggles actually through the slower speed corners. So I think they're going to have another difficult weekend in Baku as well. So really it's Ferrari versus Red Bull, isn't it?
Oh, it is, definitely. I mean, you know, I mean, with barring a miracle with Mercedes, and they find yet another chunk of time from somewhere, you know, I think they're out of it. But, you know, it really would take a bit of a miraculous turnaround for them to be back in the
and
fight.
If it's difficult for Christian Horner to know which of his two guys to support at Red Bull, I think it's pretty clear now who Ferrari have to back, isn't it?
I would say they would still be thinking in terms of Max in Red Bull and also Charles in Ferrari as their title contender, because Charles's form has been fantastic. You know, Max has only had one real blip on that score. Well, don't forget he was outqualified in Saudi by Sergio as well. So, and we're going to a track very like Saudi Arabia with Baku as well. So it could be that Max has got a problem with the Red Bull setup and Monaco as well. And so the form thing may not be so clear with Red Bull as it is with Ferrari.
And of course, Ferrari have come out in the last week saying that with the budget cap, their next upgrades aren't going to be due until Silverstone. So they've going to... It's a very different development path that the teams are having to take this year, isn't it? You know, in the past, they've always said you have to bring, on average, a tenth to every single race, otherwise you're going backwards. Whereas now, they're having to wait four or five races before bringing their next upgrade because there isn't the budget available to manufacture and develop so many new parts. And
they have to be so tactical, so discerning with every bit that they bring, and very smart as to when they introduce it. I mean, I heard Christian talking a week or so ago about just how brutal this development race is due to the budget cap and the fact that there'll be a number of teams that simply won't be able to take part in the last few races of the season. I mean, is that even possible?
Fred Vasseur, the boss of Alfa Romeo, was asked that question in Monaco. And
My birthday twin,
exactly. And he said, of course we're going to make it to the end of the season. If we're running out of budget, we'll just turn the wind tunnel off for a few weeks. So there are ways of making it, and he thinks for the big teams to be complaining like that is disingenuous.
Yeah, it seems like the teams with a higher ceiling for them aren't complaining, and the teams with a massively closer whinging like Ferrari. I can't see either of those not turning up to a Grand Prix.
Also, Mattia Binotto said in Monaco that, you know, the original budget cap was going to be 175 million, and he said, look, if we'd stuck to the original budget cap, we wouldn't even be discussing this, is what Mattia said. When I think they would, because they would be going right up to that 175, wouldn't they? And then with all the inflationary pressures we're under now, they would still be talking about needing an increase.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun. From the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.
Well, we talked a bit about the quirkiness of Baku already. And actually, a moment that sticks in my mind was the uncharacteristic mistake of our seven-time world champion, Lewis Hamilton, with that funny little magic button, well, not so magic in that moment, at the restart. Oh. I mean, I don't think I've ever seen anything like that before or since, have we?
Pinks, it was mad. Do you remember? So him and Perez, two-lap race after
that
Max...
That was cool, actually. That was really exciting.
After Max had hit the barrier, do you remember, after his tyre had let go? And remember, there was that head-on shot, and you could see the brakes on Lewis's car smoking. And I remember thinking, oh, that seems to be more than normal. And then he gets away and then doesn't brake. Runs wide and he comes out 18th or something from the first corner. I mean, I don't know what you were thinking. I was thinking two laps to go. My money's on Lewis Hamilton, even though he was second on that particular grid. And yet he let it go.
Yeah.
So how do we think they're going to fare this weekend? I mean, I'm hearing people suggest that they're not going to take a major step forward until Silverstone, that perhaps it's that kind of circuit that will really suit their car. But George Russell is the only driver to be in the points at every single race of 2022. He's had a great season so far.
I always worry about statistics like that because sooner or later it changes.
All right, misery guts.
I'm just warning you. It's luck can only go, so, but not saying it's all down to luck, because he's done a great job, yeah. But reliability and all sorts of things happening, especially when you've got a track like Baku. But let's say George has another fantastic run. Is he going to win the race? That's the question we're trying to find out the answer to. And I'd be very surprised if they don't go down that straight and be bouncing up and down like a flipping thing on a pogo stick, with their heads being smashed and their spines getting compressed and all that business. I don't know, I might be wrong.
Mercedes are trying to put a lid on expectations, saying that the slow speed nature of the corners in Baku will not suit their car. So if you combine that with the pogo stick down that 2 kilometer straight.
Yeah. So if you say that most of the corners are slow in Baku, then you basically got Monaco with a massive long straight, haven't you?
Yeah.
Let's say that the Mercedes didn't do that great there.
But Baku's proved in the past that you just got to be there at the end and you can get a result.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a Jeopardy city, isn't it? I mean, things going off all over the place. You know, you cannot get all those cars through that little castle section, can you, at the start of the race? I mean, it's really, really tight. It's great fun to watch, but it must be. I mean, that bit where they come out of in qualifying, when the sun's going down, they come around that corner where the castle is, and then they got the sun right in their eyes. You can see it on the onboard camera. It must be really difficult. Yep.
Little dart uphill, left-hander. Pinks, how was Lewis when you spoke to him after the race in Monaco? Because he's now 34 points behind Russell and he's had a lot of bad luck. Did you sense any frustration from the champ?
I asked him that because I wanted to know, A, how frustrated he was for getting stuck behind the Alpines, and B, what he could have done had he not been stuck behind the Alpines. I told you, didn't I, that Alonso couldn't have enjoyed it more. He said, oh, that was so much fun keeping Lewis behind. And actually, Lewis seemed pretty chilled about it. He said, nah, it didn't frustrate me that much. Impossible to know how fast we could have been. But I still believe there is going to be a moment where their season starts in earnest. And hopefully, for their sake, it's soon. And it's almost like the penny will drop, something will click, they'll find the key, the silver bullet, whatever you want to call it. I really feel there's just a key that will unlock the potential of that car and suddenly they'll be able to compete again for podiums or even wins.
I thought we'd seen that in Barcelona. So after Barca, I was so excited, thinking, OK, we've got a three-horse battle at the front, but no.
Did you not think that Monaco coming so soon after Barcelona was just difficult to get a read on it at a circuit like Monaco? So maybe Canada, maybe Silverstone will get a better idea of what it's capable of.
There's not enough of them, are there? I mean, you got you know, circuits like Barcelona, they're not that, there aren't that many. But his pace in Barcelona was fantastic in the catch up, the recovery drive that he had. That was awesome. And he definitely put, I mean, they would have sat out and taken note of that, that the car has pace in certain conditions. But, you know, there probably aren't enough tracks like that.
So what about McLaren? Actually, Damon, Pinks and I had a long discussion about the future of Daniel Ricciardo on last week's show. It'd be great to get your thoughts on, A, why you think the CEO of McLaren, Zak Brown, came out and said publicly that Ricciardo's stay at the team had not met expectations, and then what you think is going to happen next to our lovely Australian.
Well, let's just...
The dog's got an opinion.
Sorry, the dog's got an opinion. Right. Zak didn't exactly come out with this comment just because he wanted to make a statement about how he felt about Daniel Ricciardo. There's been a lot of conjecture, and us, the media, have been asking, what are you going to do about Daniel Ricciardo? Because everyone can see that he's reached a kind of a creative block somewhere with his performances. He can't seem to unlock what he needs. I know he won Monza, but that was an issue. When he gets in the lead, something else fires up, but something's missing. And I can remember when they signed Lando, Lando was already signed at McLaren, and then Daniel Ricciardo was signed, and he came up to us in the paddock and he said, "I'm going to end you." And I remember thinking, that is always a risky thing to say, because it looks like the other way around, that Daniel Ricciardo has been ended by Lando. He can't crack it. And then the motivation goes, and then the questions come, and then the pressure goes back onto the person who signed him in the first place. And if there's lots of resources going out to pay for a very expensive driver, then inevitably, so he's under enormous amount of strain. Does that help someone go faster? Probably not. But what to do about it? And I'm as intrigued by this as all of us, I think, because as a driver, I got my last year of racing with Jordan. I was in a similar situation. I knew I was going to stop racing. But I was 39. I knew I was coming to the end of my career. So, but I couldn't unlock the performance, and it didn't matter what I did. I just couldn't get anything out of myself. What is that all about? How can it suddenly disappear? And I think that with Danny's only 32, so he's definitely got loads more to give. Where's it gone? How do you find it? How do you make it work in that car?
And I think what makes it even more curious is what worked in Italy that didn't click before or after. Now, I know some will say, well, the front runners took each other out in that race, but actually it didn't really look in doubt. I thought Daniel just was in a groove that weekend. He looked magnificent. And actually I remember them saying, yeah, we're on for a big one this weekend, as they came into it. So something clicked. And why can't it click again? I mean, I would, in layman's terms, you think it could and should.
I don't think Checo Perez's performances this year have helped Daniel, in that I think he and Daniel had very similar seasons last year in terms of getting used to their new teams, getting used to their new cars. Checo has then taken...
And Carlos, yes.
And Checo has then taken a big step forward this year.
Different car, though. I think suits Carlos more. Checo more.
100%. But if you're Zak Brown, you're just looking at your investment thinking, well, hang on, Checo Perez can do that. Daniel is still at sea with this new car. It doesn't seem like, whatever the reason is, it doesn't seem like we're going to be able to unlock this potential. I need to do something about it. And in the 7 days since we last did the pod in Monaco, I've seen Pierre Gasly's name linked more and more to that second McLaren seat in 2023. I don't know what you guys think about that, in terms of whether you think he'd be a good fit.
He definitely can't go up to the big team now, can he? Because it's a lockout, unless Max leaves, which is, well, it could happen.
Pierre needs to do a Carlos Sainz. He needs to leave the Red Bull family to progress his Formula One career, and I think for him, McLaren would be a very good shout.
Well, you just don't know, though. I mean, we all thought that McLaren would be a great shout for Daniel. Like a great fit in terms of personalities. It's the similar sort of ethos. And as Carlos pointed out, it's not an easy car to drive. And if it doesn't suit your style, it doesn't suit your style. I think Gasly's an interesting one because he's clearly a very talented driver. But I think that Monaco was a circuit that suits the AlphaTauri in principle. And they came away really, yeah, it was a real damp squib. I mean, qualifying, he had a good race, pulling back to, what was it, 11th? But actually, qualifying was terrible. And the whole weekend promised so much more. So there's no doubt that he's got talent. It's just difficult to make these kind of predictions. If you don't know if a car and a driver will click. And I've said this before on this podcast, I'm a great believer in signing with this team and staying with the team and growing with the team. Something that I think Lando's done brilliantly. Some people said that he signed too soon, re-signed too soon for McLaren. But actually, I think there's a lot to be said for growing up within a team.
Provided you're giving the team what they need, everything's hunky-dory, that's fine. You can all go together. But when you're not delivering and there was expectation and, you know, it's just like a love affair, you know, eventually people they feel awkward trying to help that driver and the team, and, you know, they know that the problem is the driver, it's not the car, because the other guy is doing a better job. And that becomes really awkward for a competitive person like Daniel Ricciardo to stomach. You know, it can be kind of, it just gets worse. It doesn't seem to get better. And that's why I think, you know, I wonder whether there's something about the nature of Formula One these days, which is helping a younger generation of drivers, because I think they've been used to playing computer games. Look at Max. I mean, he's on a computer game the whole time. It used to be they're all going karting. You know, Michael Schumacher. Sorry, Michael was, you know, he went and did karting when he had a chance. The exception to that is Fernando Alonso, who also goes and karts all the time to keep his edge. But there's a younger generation who have used computers a lot more, and I don't think Daniel was one of that generation. And I think there's something about the way the cars can be driven using different parts of the brain. I wonder about that. I don't have any evidence for that other than the fact that I can't use these blooming computer games or simulators. It makes me feel queasy. But some kids don't have a problem with it, and it's more to do with the signals they're getting are more eye to hand rather than through the seat of their pants. They're able to respond to what they're seeing. And so that potentially opens up a different setup possibility for engineers, so they can go for an optimum setup, which perhaps doesn't give the feel to the old school drivers as much. Because you look at Albon, you look at Lando, you look at George, they're of a different generation. They've been fed different information, different training to some of the other guys. It's just a theory.
That's very interesting. I like it.
Where does Lewis Hamilton fit in that?
Well, I think Lewis is
a gamer.
No, I don't think so.
Would you get to a point where you're just so good that you can do anything?
This is really the point, isn't it? That the really good drivers can drive anything. They all could. You know, Gilles Villeneuve, give him a really crappy car, he'll just get everything out of it. You know, Ayrton. You know, dare I say Nigel as well. Alain would like the car to be just like this. You know, he'd like it like that. But still, you know, the really great drivers could drive a really difficult car to drive, and they'd find a way. And I think Lewis is one of those.
The other thing worth noting about Gasly, of course, is that he finished on the podium in Baku last time out. Checo, Vettel and Gasly.
It was a hell of a podium, wasn't it?
It was, wasn't it? And they were all drivers who'd been let go the previous season by their teams.
Yeah, very good point.
It was a bit of like, ha-ha, last laugh.
Pinks, funny you should mention Sebastian Vettel. I think there's a bit of speculation about his future. He doesn't know. He's publicly said, I don't know what I'm going to do next year. If he were to leave Aston Martin at the end of this year, and if Daniel Ricciardo were to leave McLaren, I could see that being a good place for Ricciardo to end up. It's getting bigger, but it's still got a small team mentality. I think Daniel would be welcomed. I think his personality would light up that place, and he would very quickly get the team around him, and they are capable of making a good car.
We're talking about the Bottas factor, aren't we?
Yes!
You know, we're talking about Valtteri. Bottas,
as Pink said last
week. Or Butter, yeah. Valtteri Bottom. Yeah, he's a changed man, isn't he? He's laying around naked in rivers.
He's got such a wide smile on his face.
He's got his own
single race at the moment.
Got a whole team to himself.
It's true.
Making jokes.
That's what we're going
to
call it now. You just coined it. It's the Bottas factor, isn't it? We want to see Daniel go and have that kind of experience for the next 2 or 3 years and see out Formula One on.
I will just say Valtteri came from a top team with quite good form, you have to say, and we're looking at Daniel Ricciardo, who appears not to be able to unlock his full potential. Why would you sign a driver like that? If I was the team manager, Mr. Crack, of Mercedes, then I would be I would be worried about signing Daniel Ricciardo. So I think he has to show he can recover his form. That's my word of advice. There has to be glimmers. I know that Natalie was making the point about him being the most marketable driver, and of course he's great. He's a real seller in the marketing side of things, but not when you're not winning. That is always a killer, for any racing driver. You've got to be performing, and he knows he can do it. It's just something in that car or something. They're not giving him the feeling that he needs to be able to lean on that car and get the maximum out of Daniel Ricciardo.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda Racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda Racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun, from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at Honda.com.
Okay, so we're all about to get on a flight to Azerbaijan, and I want to know just how tricky this track actually is. I remember talking to a lot of the drivers who've said that they love it because they love the challenge of it. It certainly isn't easy. There's that tricky wind, isn't there, off the Caspian Sea that can catch you out. What do you think, Damon?
Yeah, I agree. I think it's one of the tracks that get your attention as a driver. It's a little bit like Macau. For those people listening don't know about Macau, it used to be on the calendar for all our aspiring F1 drivers. We'd have to go to the street circuit in what used to be the Portuguese province of China in Macau near Hong Kong. And it had this fantastically long straight called the Yacht Club Strait. And then you'd climb up through the mountains up the back, through these tiny narrow streets with no runoff, just concrete walls and everything. So very like Baku, because you're running through a street track, but with a low downforce setup. So the car is not nailed in the same way that it would be around Monaco, where you haven't got a long straight, so you don't need to peel off the wing. But here they peel off the wing. So as I was saying earlier, some of those sections, you've got the sun in your eyes, and yet you've got buildings all around you as well. So you've got shadow, you've got difficult braking points, you've got little bumps and stuff, big stops into very tight corners. Always creates chaos and opportunity in equal measure.
Well, and the greats do make mistakes. Charles Leclerc, 2019, took too much curb, turning left and going up past the castle there. So you have to be really precise, as you say, Damon. And then, as Pink says, it is the city of winds, isn't it? It's 28 metres below sea level. It's just got all these sort of quirky facts and things going on in Baku. But it's a bit of a modern day classic. It's one that drivers really want to win because you know you've survived a battle to win there.
You have, yeah. And against all sort of expectations, you know, it's one of those, I think, the circuits that have are compromised in the way that they have to build them sometimes can be more interesting than ones that they've got carte blanche to do whatever they like, because you get these, you know, we get these bits of the track where they go, well, we can't really move the castle, we'll have to go around it that way. So it is fun. It's a fun track. It's quite a long lap, but
Bit of a contradiction, isn't it, in that on paper it's just lots of 90 degree corners, which doesn't look that interesting, but because you're taking the downforce off, as you say, Damon, they become more interesting. And you, I guess, as a driver on a slippery track, you get a little bit greedy in qualifying, and we do see people make mistakes. So, wow.
Yeah.
I'm getting excited.
And actually, you calling it a modern day classic, I think, is a really apt description when you consider the architecture of the place, because you have these century old castle right next to it, a monstrosity of a skyscraper. It's this juxtaposition, isn't it? What do they call it, actually? An anachronism. It's littered with anachronisms.
Mm. And even the paddock.
That's a good word for a Tuesday morning, isn't it?
It's well done, Pinks. And the paddock has got the, is it the government building overshadowing it as well? So
which
there is
never got anyone in it. I mean, maybe they have the weekend off, but I've never seen anyone go in that.
They're all coming to the race.
But what a stunning bit of stonework. It's a gorgeous looking building. It's made out of this lovely honey-coloured stone, but it's all empty. Maybe they'll get around to using it when we're not there.
We think it's empty, but we know it's not really. Who do we think is going to win it? Can I answer my own question first?
I am more
on Charles Leclerc this weekend than I have been at any other race this year. I think it's got him written all over it. Mm. And my goodness, he needs it.
He hasn't won there, has he? He hasn't ever won in Baku.
No, and after two really disappointing races for him, he will be feisty. I just hope he can keep a lid on that feistiness and not overstep it and put it in the barrier or do something silly. But if he keeps it clean, Charles Leclerc for me.
Ferrari have never won in Baku.
Yeah, but then...
That's a hell of a start, isn't it?
But then Charles Leclerc's bad luck was due to change in Monaco and it didn't.
back on Charles Leclerc, he was brilliant in Formula 2 in Baku as well.
Yeah, but something's going on. I'm going for Sergio. I think Sergio's going to win. I think the form book, we're going to have to readjust our sights here.
I'm going to say Carlos, just for the hell of it, get his maiden win in Formula 1.
That would be awesome as well, Pinks. Damon, so Checo's won it in your race. What happened to Max Verstappen in your race?
I think he got tangled up with Charles Leclerc. and neither of them didn't finish.
Okay, Damon, it's that time again. Time for you to answer some pressing questions. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Questions, please. Damon Hill, do you think it's time maybe you should change your approach to racing?
Well, I don't even know how to start answering that question, but anyway.
It's the Williams leading, Damon Hill.
Some more questions, please.
Damon, were you happy with the start?
Damon Hill, congratulations for this winning, Damon. You must be satisfied.
Any questions? Yeah.
Well, Damon, it must have been absolutely gutting that last couple of laps.
Damon, it looked like he had it really under control.
Some more questions, please.
Damon Hill has done a fantastic job.
Hi, Damon. It's Neil from Reading. After a pretty big sporting weekend with the likes of Rafa Nadal winning another French Open, Joe Root getting 10,000 test runs, and Wales reaching the World Cup. I was wondering, these people are all now sporting heroes to some degree. Who is your sporting hero in any sport that you're interested in?
So, Neil, yes, good question. Who is my sporting hero? I always struggle to answer this one. Obviously, I'm my sporting hero to a degree.
You can't say that.
I can, I just did.
You're far more modest than that, Damon.
No, but I mean, anyway, right. Well, thanks for correcting me there, Natalie, on that. You're right. Irony doesn't travel well anymore. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you my sporting heroes. When I was younger, I suppose my dad, Graham Hill, was my sporting hero. You know, that was an obvious one because I had a sporting hero as a dad. So he was very much someone who inspired me. In the other categories of racing drive, I suppose Nigel Mansell had a quite big influence on me. I liked his style. I liked his attacking style. But in the grand world of sport, what about Seve Ballesteros? I mean, I watched the film about Seve. What an amazing, passionate, lovely guy he was. And there are just so many great examples of sporting heroes, people who have maintained some sort of integrity, I mean, and set these kind of standards for us all to aspire to. You know, there's been plenty of them in sport, and I'm struggling here to pick one out.
Who's yours, TC?
Well, thinking in a golfing context, I was more of a Bernard Langer fan than a Seve Ballesteros person. But my ultimate sporting hero would be Ian Botham. Yeah. Hugely admired the fact that he could do anything with a cricket ball. And I mean, and if you're talking about Ian Botham, then being an all-rounder, then I also think of Shane Warne. Obviously more famous as a bowler than a batsman, but Warne could go in and knock it around the MCG as well. So those would be my outside of racing heroes. Inside of racing, I always think, who were your fans when you were a teenager and it was all Gilles Villeneuve and Senna and people like that?
Barry Sheen was one of mine because I was into bikes. So Barry was the guy that I kind of aimed for. But before that, I suppose it was Mike Harewood. Mike Harewood was unbelievable. When I was very young, he did his Formula One career and then came back and won the Isle of Man after having been away for 11 years.
And if you're into bikes and cars, Damon, then what about John Surtees?
Yeah, I would say I think I admired John. A lot of people found him quite a difficult person, but you know what he achieved on that score was just incredible, and he was so passionate about his racing as well. I mean, I don't have one. I think I'm too old now to kind of have specific horse sporting heroes. I see them all in the context of people who have given everything they have to their profession and then to life in the wider context. You know, Muhammad Ali. I saw Muhammad Ali come into some sort of event in Ireland, and he walked into the stadium and just the place erupted. He had this charisma, which was immeasurable.
And Pinks, who was your sporting hero?
I have two, and they actually have the same name, Zola. Gianfranco and Bud. Gianfranco Zola, I just thought, to your point about charisma, was just brilliant, and he just had such a lovely way about him, and obviously magnificent player. And Zola Bud, was my early sporting memory, was at the 84 Olympics, and she didn't wear shoes to run in, so I decided I wouldn't either. And I just love running as a kid. I still do. And she was just this natural, brilliant talent. Very shy. I don't know if you've seen The Fall. Have you seen the documentary about her and Becca Saini? Incredibly moving.
I was intrigued by the fact she didn't wear running shoes.
I drove my parents mad. Footprints all around the house because I never put shoes on. And if you don't put shoes on, you can't take them off. And so you bring muddy toes back indoors with you.
Well, Pinks, what about a Formula One context?
I would definitely say Niki Lauda. And that was cemented by the fact that I got to know him before he died in the sport. But I loved him growing up, his bravery in coming back from such a horrific crash, but his sense of humour as well and how direct he was. And also, it was my favourite joke. My dad taught me, my first ever joke was, who is the current world champion? And then he'd say, Lauda. And then, or you'd say Lauda, sorry. And he would say, who is the current world champion?
The old ones are the best ones.
I literally thought that was the funniest joke ever.
Hey guys, it's Dan from the Goldie in Oz. Damon, I'm really enjoying your random tweets about drivers having cups of tea. Can you tell me what the story is with that?
Okay, so the way this happened was that there's a guy called Freeman who's on Twitter who comes up with some absolutely incredible stuff from the archive and posts them. And there was a picture, I think it was Stirling Moss at first, drinking a cup of tea with a lovely white cup, you know, and it was not the typical shot of a driver with a, you know, spraying champagne. And he's got his race overalls and he's in the car drinking tea. And then he posted, another one of another driver, I can't remember who it was now, drinking tea. And I started to retweet them, and I called them the driver tea drinking racing drivers series, number one, Stirling Moss, and then the next one was, and then there was, he came up with another one of my dad as well. So it became a kind of thing. And just over the weekend, he posted one of my dad being served tea by a chimpanzee. You know, because he was sponsored by Brooke Bond Oxo. And Brooke Bond Oxo, for the people who don't know what that was, they used to make tea. And so they had this campaign which involved chimpanzees, which they don't allow anymore because it was unkind to the chimpanzees. But anyway, that was the gag. And there's my dad sitting in his racing car and a chimpanzee with a teapot next to him. So it's got a bit out of control. Valtteri has got his coffee. But he's always in Netflix. I don't know if you noticed, but he's always going over to the coffee machine and having a coffee.
Just before quali. I remember Jensen used to do that as well. Quick double espresso before getting in the car.
And didn't Alessandro Nannini, they brought out this rule about the amount of caffeine you can have in your bloodstream. And Nannini was way over the limit because he kept on having this espressos before he went in his car. But I would never have anything that made me jumpy before I got in a racing car. I know it's supposed to stimulate your reactions and stuff, but I don't want any more stimulation. I've got enough. I am more of a tea drinker. I would probably have a cup of tea, you know, mug of tea with builder's tea with one sugar
before getting in and, the car or whilst sat down with your engineers after.
No, just sitting down with the engineers, you know, just having but there are beer people who produce beer, aren't there, Natalie? There's some people like
Jensen, DC, Daniel, they're all involved with the beer brand out in Monaco.
Yeah.
And
but you can't drink that.
And Valtteri's girlfriend.
What? She's a shareholder in their company. Oh,
yeah.
Gosh.
Yeah. 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 You're making me thirsty.
So there's the answer to that question.
You're actually making me blue.
Well, I think that is about it. We can't really talk any more about what is coming up from Baku, and so excited that I'm actually going to be being there in Baku and coming to you with Tom and Natalie from the paddock.
We'll be back in a week, Tuesday the 14th of June. We can't keep talking about what's going to happen in Baku because we've learned over the years that no one really knows. It's so unpredictable.
For listening, friends, we'll see you in Baku. Until then, F1 Nation is produced by Formula One and Audio Boom Studios.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
2025 marks the 60th anniversary of the first Honda Formula One victory in the 1965 Mexico Grand Prix. More than half a century later, the drive and innovation that powers Honda racing still inspires everything Honda does, from F1 victories to the Civic Hybrid being named the 2025 North American Car of the Year. Honda Racing is leading the charge when it comes to innovation. And here's where it gets really cool. Every Honda-powered F1 car is packed with sensors, hundreds of them, all feeding live data straight back to the Honda racing team in Sakura, Japan. We're talking about real-time analysis that helps engineers squeeze out every ounce of performance on the track. And the amazing part? That same cutting-edge thinking is making its way into the cars we drive every day, thanks to the expertise of Honda racing engineers. Their work has led to advances like the hybrid technology now used in Honda's consumer vehicles. The 2025 Civic Sedan Hybrid is engineered for fun. from the racetrack to your driveway. Learn more about the Civic and the latest Honda innovations at honda.com.